What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and all the places you need your music to be. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in-store 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and really appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, studio artists, DJs, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 per month, and even their top tier breaks down to only $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners 30% off your first year of membership, making their already affordable services even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. Click that link and it'll give you 30% off your first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and can't thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Drops. Drops are an Oregon-based edible company and one of my go-tos when I'm heading into the dispensary. Their consistency and price point keeps them in my regular rotation of gummies. I love their 100-milligram canisters that have the little 5-milligram bites in there. They make it easy to monitor dosage and not get unexpectedly blasted. The chill ones are my favorite. They're this banging watermelon flavor, and one thing that I love about these edibles is that they taste great. Sometimes you get some edibles that pack a punch but taste horrible, and Drops I have to be careful with because they taste so good that I just want to eat them like a bag of Sour Patch Kids. With Drops, you can choose your edibles based on how you want to feel. That's possible because Drops are made with live rosin, a solventless full spectrum cannabis concentrate. As a full spectrum concentrate, rosin contains the full array of psychoactive compounds in cannabis, which work together to give each strain its unique effect. All of their cannabis is flash frozen and processed into that live rosin. The flash freezing prevents plant material from decomposing and preserves terpenes that evaporate during the traditional drying and curing processes. They come in 10 different flavors and strains to choose from, including several CBD variations. You can find Drops at your favorite local Oregon dispensary. Just tap into the link in the episode notes to find a supplier in your area. Big thanks to Drops for their support. Let's start the episode. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning in to the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so. And that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, which will give it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast. And just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Give the podcast a 5-star rating on Spotify if that's where you're listening. Tell a friend about the podcast. Leave a comment on a social media post. Check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month. Those are on Apple and Spotify. Links for those are in the episode notes, pretty spread out genre-wise, and just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month and some things that are making it in to my DJ sets. Hope everybody is doing well out there. I am home from tour, and I am equally exhausted and energized from this run of shows with High Pulp. I'll have a tour recap episode coming at you soon, but this was the most successful string of 11 shows this band has ever done, including four or five that were sold out. So more from that to come. And I'm home and I'm trying not to slip into my usual routine of just taking a week off to decompress. Somehow I got a lot of sleep on this tour, which is never expected. So I'm trying to get right back to work here, and I'm stoked to share this episode with Santiago, the bass player from the band Sistemas and Establis Unstable Systems. This was one of the most memorable conversations I had at this year's Treefort Music Festival in Boise, Idaho, a few months back. And it is also the last of the conversations. So this wraps up the Treefort coverage for the year. And it is also another international milestone for the podcast, as this was the first band that I've ever gotten to chat with from Chile. It's really cool that Santiago took the time to chat with me. He's the only person in the band that speaks English, and since I'm an American dummy and don't speak Spanish fluently or any other language, I could only chat with him. And it always blows me away how many people from other countries speak English fluently. Such a cool skill to have, and I wish it was more encouraged in this country to learn languages more fluently at a young age, instead of the basic high school requirements to learn very basic Spanish, German, or French. I feel like the single language can just really limit your experiences when you're traveling or encounter someone from another country, and you just kind of get to see how impactful that tool can be for a band like Unstable Systems to come here and tour the States and also get to be able to do some press. So big thanks to Santiago for taking the time to talk with me about the band and its origins and where things are at now. As you will hear in this chat, I think Santiago has this unique take on the history of this thing, because before he was the bass player in the band, he was the front of house sound engineer. But this dude was rad. He was so much fun to chat with. We had a lot of laughs throughout this thing and geeked out on the music as well. Crazy that it's almost been 3 months since we recorded this. Listening back, I was just like, had almost forgotten some of the things that we talked about, and it feels like I was at Treefort just a couple weeks ago. So I'm stoked to get back there next year, and I hope that this band, Sistemas and Establis, makes it back to the States soon. If you dig the chat, please give them a follow and keep up with what they've got going on. Check out some of the live videos on their YouTube channel. I had the pleasure of getting to see both of their Treefort sets, one the night before this chat and once a few hours after this conversation with Santiago. And we talked a lot about the live show and the thought of the aesthetic specifically of everything for the live show, down to the look of the instruments, which I thought was really interesting. Some of the thought that they're putting in to this thing outside of just playing the music. So shout out to the other members of Unstable Systems: Jose Tomas, aka J Jota, and Javier, the drummer of the band. That dude plays with so much energy and passion, and Santiago and I discuss a certain moment in the set that really blew my mind, a very memorable set from these guys. And I will put all the links in the episode notes for Sistemas and Establis Unstable Systems, and we are going to get in to episode 365 of the podcast, all the way from Chile, Sistemas and Establis, and we are going to kick off the episode with a track from their album O, or Zero, whatever you want to call it. It's called Retorno de Saturno, or Return to Saturn. Let's do the damn thing. We'll be right back.
It's no.
Can
no.
you curse?
Yes, you can curse. Absolutely. No, no, absolutely.
The other day, they told us in FM radio that I said fuck, and they told us like, no, you shouldn't say that. They can buy us.
You did say it?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh man, they must have been.
I wasn't aware of that.
They must have been flipping out. That's
they were kind of worried, but they said that it was their mistake because they didn't tell us that we couldn't say that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's on them.
I will say it in Spanish the next time. Por la chucha.
Well, right on, man. I'm excited to have the opportunity to chat with you. I've been listening a lot to the music and getting acquainted that way. And then last night I went and saw you play.
Yeah, we saw
here at Tree Fort, and yeah, the show was pretty mind blowing, man. I'm glad I got to. I don't know, you can get like a sense of things, you know, because you have like the live performances from mm-hmm. the Dunk Festival, and mm-hmm. you can get some sort of understanding mm-hmm. of what it's going to be like. But there's something about actually getting to be in the room mm. for a live show to like fully mm. take in, especially what you guys do with mm. like. There's so many different styles of music incorporated into what you do. Just talk to me about how the band came together mm-hmm. in the beginning.
Well, this is, first of all, thank you for having us here, or having me, because I'm alone.
I gotta get up on my Spanish. So, yeah,
we can try it. Somos tres, no. Actually, because the Chilean Spanish is really weird.
Okay.
So. You should not try that. The band started in 2017. Javier, the drummer, had another band before that was called Joven Abuelo. That's like old young or something like that. And they were like in the early post-rock scene in Chile and Santiago. And well, that band grew to have like a kind of a cult audience, or popularity. And well, it didn't work out. And then Javier met José Tomás. That José Tomás comes from a more classical background. And they were like we are going to have a band. We are going to have a band, and then they got together with Mauricio, that was like the first bass player of the band, and they started rehearsing. They got all their equipment in the rehearsal room, like synthesizers. They were like all trying these new instruments at the time.
Yeah.
for them.
Does Javier play a bunch of different instruments or just drums?
Javier?
Yeah.
I mean, he plays drums and he has all these synths going on. So they were all like really aware that synths were something that they wanted to try.
Yeah.
Besides the drums, bass, guitar, and keyboard. So they went ahead and they started rehearsing, and they have told me, because I wasn't there at that time, they kind of like experimented with all that. They kind of assembled this, if you can call it, songs.
Yeah.
And the record was made. The first one, that one, O, or zero, or however you want to call it, or circle. And well, that's like the end point of the those experiments. And I actually joined the band as a sound engineer for front of house when that record came out. And we started touring around Chile. Well, they went to play at Colombia, like their first show, because Javier had some connections there. Javier was running as a manager for other bands, mainly Como Asesinar a Felipes. That's like a very important alternative band in Chile.
Okay.
They do like a mix of jazz and hip hop, but really like experimental stuff. So he had some connections, and the band like took off really soon in their career, like 2017 and 2018.
Were you a big fan? Like once you saw the band and you started running front of house, mm-hmm. were you pretty into the music?
I was always really fan of the bands that I did sound engineer, like live sound. I worked with like, at that time I was working like with 20 bands or something like that. But Sistemas Inestables was really fun because it was the only instrumental band I was doing live sound. And being instrumental, it kind of pushes the music in another level.
Yeah.
You know, like it gets the music and in Sistemas Inestables is really important and you can sense it because there's lots of like musical moments happening all the time. Lots of changes, lots of like, it's kind of like a progressive music, not in the sense of the traditional progressive music.
Right.
But as a live sound engineer, it was pretty fun to like be part of the movement of the sounds, to exaggerate some moments, to delve into, I don't know. There's a song called DDVPAI. It's like letters that mean something that in Spanish has sense, not in English. De dónde venimos y para dónde vamos. Where do we come from and where do we go? That's the meaning of the song.
Yeah.
And there's a part that everything like goes pretty like post-rocky. And the snare goes like huge, and I started doing like a huge, the most reverb possible.
Oh, sorry.
And it went, and sounded like, I don't know, like tennis at Wimbledon. Like, yeah.
So you were having fun getting
so
to mix,
much
mix
fun.
This music.
So much fun, yeah.
Yeah. And then you, I would assume once you got into the band, you already knew the music so well because you were, you know, paying attention from
I was singing the music all the time in my head. And I was like PFL, like soloing the channel so I could hear the bass by itself.
So you knew what stuff was supposed to sound like.
Actually, when the change happened, when Mauricio left the band, I was kind of nervous because I didn't play in a band for like 15 years, so I was doing only live sound. I had my bass, obviously, but I wasn't playing, and I was like, let's try to rehearse one time, and if it doesn't work, you find another bass. And it was like one shot. It happened automatically.
Yeah. Was it weird or just a lot different for you to all of a sudden be on the stage looking out at things instead of behind the board looking at the stage?
Yeah, the first time was really weird because of I was really nervous, but actually because of that I couldn't look the band, like what was happening, I was in the band.
Yeah.
And I actually I wear this like mask, so. And all the lighting and all the fog and actually I don't see anything. so I went through to see everything, to see nothing.
Yeah, I like the mask. I think it like makes everything like a little more intense because you're wearing that mask and it just like fits the aesthetic of like the music like so well. You know, like it seems to make sense that you're in this mask, and I kind of like that since you're the one that's usually like speaking into the microphone. If there is any of those moments where you're talking to the audience, it's like this real muffled sound too because of the mask.
Yeah, actually it has like a lot of senses. Before, they didn't try to have any like costume design or whatever. They were like doing black shirts and that was it. And I in some context in Chile in 2019 there was like a huge protest movement, and the masks were everywhere. Like we all have masks because of the gases of the police, So it was really part of our daily basis those days. And then the pandemic with the other masks.
Right.
And when we started like figuring out what we were going to do in those days that we were like really far, because Javier lives in another part of the country. We were like trying to solve, well, technically how we were going to do this and what was happening with us those days. So the mask, when we were planning our first show at 2021, I came out with the mask and they were like, nah, don't use that, blah, blah. And I said, no, this has more meaning than you can figure out, and maybe the people will understand it.
Yeah.
And so it has like that connection with the Chilean movement from those days. And actually from the name of the band, Sistemas Instables, that's unstable systems. So right. It's kind of like a criticism to what we are doing to the planet, to the messy society we are building.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. I
kind of like a post-apocalyptic thing.
Yeah. I feel like you can, like the name of the band is almost representative of like what you feel when you're watching the show too, you know, like it's like it's
pretty
intense
unstable.
And it like feels unstable in the way that we were talking about it being progressive and it begun like so many different types of movements and it can like just make you feel on edge or a little anxious, you know, at times, which I love post-rock. So well, like it kind of like speaks to me pretty heavy. And I think like one of the things I really love about the band is like the patience shown in the songwriting, like the patience to build up these moments. Cause sometimes it takes a while, you know, and especially like doing the longer form songs when you're 10 plus minutes into a song, like to be able to keep the excitement or like the anticipation of the moments, like as someone in the audience, just waiting for like these moments of the songs where they just like absolutely explode. Like the last song that you guys played last night was like that was incredible, man. Like just waiting for this moment to happen. And if you're in for it, then like the reward is like the explosion of like the emotions that come through.
Really appreciate that.
Was everybody pretty into instrumental music within the band before starting?
Like no, that was never out of the question that the band was going to be instrumental.
Yeah.
We have thought sometimes to like try some things with vocals, but not in the sense of singing, like not in the sense of a lyric. But maybe some words, maybe some like doing, I don't know, the microcore has a vocoder, so kind of tries that. We haven't tried it out because we don't have the mic and because of the mask.
Right. Well, I think the mask would maybe help with keeping it just like a layer of
in
instrumentation.
In Uruguay, we saw a band that that they actually had like little mics put inside the masks.
Yeah.
So they were processing those voices with lots of effects and stuff. And we got that idea, but sometimes to add more stuff to our set is kind of like difficult to solve. So No, the instrumental is actually, it has more sense to us to, well, actually, like, to have like a position in the world, like to be in a globalized musical scene. Not only for the strategic point about it, but because we are really into to like to express ourselves by the means of music itself, and let the music like translate the meaning to the audience in what whichever way they feel. We kind of like set the mood for that. So for example, the explosion of the last song, you kind of have like a different landscapes where that explosion would happen. We have like a main idea, but they have told us so many different scenarios that the audience think or sense that those explosions happen. So that's kind of like a really cool feedback.
Yeah. Is there a lot of freedom for like improvisation within the songs, or is it all like stuck to a structure?
No, the improvisation comes more in the rehearsal room. For the set, it's kind of like it's more written out. It's more programmed. We have all these synths connected through MIDI. So that's kind of like the point, actually, in this unstable system, meaning like to, it kind of pushes us, the humans, against the machines a lot. Like we don't have too much time to fail, but when the machines fails, we have to solve their problems. So it's kind of like a relationship, like a love and hate relationship.
Yeah, I would assume too, when everything's kind of like chained together, mm-hmm. that like one thing goes out and it's,
everything
it's
goes
done.
Totally wrong. Yeah. Like, yesterday happened.
During the set?
The last song started really, really wrong because we had like one knob.
And I saw like kind of moving around, like someone's different, checking the knobs a little bit, it seemed like.
No. And that part when José Tomás goes around the Javier scenes and mine scenes, he's just triggering some stuff like to get the random sequencing going. But at the last song, the sound wasn't doing its thing, so we had like to reset the synth and the whole tempo of the drum machine messes up. So yeah, if one thing fails, everything fails.
Yeah, it was also just like really exciting and engaging to watch the live show, just because there's it feels like each of you are doing so much for just three of you being up there. It's such a huge sound, but watching Jay like on the keys and then flip into the guitar, but then he's also on all the pedals
and he's playing the drums on the other side.
Yeah. This is like, that was amazing. Yeah.
No, he's if he like in the same sense we were talking about the synths.
Yeah.
If he fails, I mean, if he suddenly quits the band, we're out. He does just so many things. He actually composes most of the songs.
Okay.
Like the main structure, then we are going like as a trio adding stuff. But José Tomás is a huge part of the band. Like playing the keyboards, the drums, the synths, the guitar, going around, triggering stuff.
I like that he played with his back to the audience too.
Yeah.
Has that always been his thing?
We don't have any other choice because the set has to be that way.
Because it's, that's triggering the only stuff too.
No. That's the only way the set can go, because at the rehearsal room, when they were trying like how to do what they wanted to do, that's the only solution they had. So the drums had to be on the front, the keyboards had to go facing down to the back, the bass player had to be like in front of the keyboards. So he didn't have any option, and it actually kind of went good in the understanding of the audience that that in theater or in music, everyone is like facing the audience, and we actually don't care because we are trying to do the things that we're planning to do.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, it just like adds again to it's similar to a much different thing, but similar to you wearing the mask. Like, I just like that he's facing, like his back is to the audience.
That's like, kind of like a mysterious
thing. Yeah. And it's just also like, I like how close you all are. Like, yeah. Are you usually always like that close?
It's not possible to do it anyway.
Yeah.
That's, we're always close. We have played in huge scenarios, stages. And we see like a little point in the middle of on the yeah. stage, because that's the set.
Yeah,
there's no other way.
Do you feel like that like keeps you more connected to one another during the show too?
Totally. We are always looking each other. We are always like we can always like actually like to give a hand if it's needed, like if Jota is in trouble with something, I can actually go and give him a hand.
Yeah.
Or Javier is right over here over there, so it feels really close, and I actually can feel that the audience kind of like comes closer because of that. So
yeah, I wanted to be as close like, as possible to see what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of things, like a lot of scenes, a lot of lights, and it's pretty unconventional. So they kind of like wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the magic of it. So
yeah. And as far as the lighting, is that all stuff that you guys have pre-programmed?
For yesterday, we kind of talk with the lighting guy.
Yeah.
We in Chile, we have a lightning.
Just a dedicated person do that. How important do you think that is to like the instrumental live set of having like good lighting going along with the music?
For us, it's very important because it empowers the music a lot more in the sense of the experience, and actually we the times that we have like do shows with someone that hasn't that does not have the like the musical sense of lighting, like diminishes the show because of the breaks, because of the, I don't know, the strobes, when everything goes crazy, and it the lightnings are really I run with other bands too as a manager or as a producer back in Chile, and they weren't aware of the importance of the experience of a show, like the sound. It's actually, also they are all aware that the sound is really important because they are musicians. But I don't know, the costumes, the design, the lighting design, the position on stage, the looks of your instruments, everything adds up to the experience. I was playing a precision bass before, but I'm kind of old, so my back didn't support it. and then I found this headless bass.
Yeah, man, that's a cool look to go along with your mask.
And it goes like futuristical style.
Yeah.
And actually, in a technical sense, it really works because the precision has more body, and it has more wood, so it kind of resonates more. This has no body, no head.
Yeah.
It's just like a string with a pickup. So for all the distortion pedals and all the effects, it works really well. And actually, José Tomás is thinking about going with a headless guitar too.
Oh,
so
nice.
So we're all going headless. and Javier, he really likes like the cymbals go like this way, like it's like in a vertical position.
Right.
And it's really unconventional, but it suddenly adds up a lot to the looks of the band, and in that sense the lightning also creates and the fog actually they create like a conceptual ambience about it.
Yeah. I think it definitely like adds to the music. Mm. Like it is all a part of the show.
Yeah.
And like without any of those components, maybe the live show doesn't feel as special.
Mm. We have thought actually for some shows that we couldn't get the whole team to go, mainly in Chile or Latin America. When the whole team can't go, we actually think about doing the show. Sometimes it's better to not give a show, to not do a show, yeah, if it's not going to be a complete show and we're not going to express the whole thing that we plan to do. So we are really like responsible for the thing that we do.
Yeah. And did someone take over for you as front of house when you moved to playing,
yeah,
bass? And
we're with Jen, that is our sound engineer.
Okay.
And
because that's important too with the, yeah, with what you're doing sound wise, right? To have, mm-hmm, like someone that knows the ins and outs of everything that you're doing.
Well, in the band, we are, the three of us are like sound engineers, so we all understand a lot of what we're doing. But when I took the bass, we were kind of in a difficult position to find a sound engineer, because in Chile it's mainly cumbia and other genres of music.
Yeah.
And then we found Jen, and she completely understood it. She was really into it. She was really, how you say it, humilde, I don't know the word.
Excited, enthusiastic.
No, I would say like she was willing to learn,
okay,
from what the band was doing already, and then she started adding her own style to the music. And it translated really good, and we have been with her for the last 2 years, and nothing but compliments,
yeah,
to the sound.
So because you guys are all sound engineers, does that mean that it's you're making all of the recorded music on your own?
Yeah. Yeah, we have our own studio, like a room, a live room, and the laboratory.
Yeah.
And we have all, back in the studio, we have more synths and more stuff,
yeah,
lots of plugins, and we try a lot of things, but I was saying that we all understand sound in like in a artistical manner and, mm-hmm, in a technical manner. So for example, to get everything connected, and to understand the possibilities of what the synth can do, or maybe if we're checking another instrument that we want to add, or another synth, or maybe go with a sequence yeah, of stuff, we all talk the same language about it, so it's pretty easy. And at the same time, maybe we can actually fight about something that we obsessively think it's the best.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're making the recorded music, mm-hmm, since there's only three of you on stage, mm-hmm, for the live performance, are you guys ever thinking about how it's going to translate live?
Sometimes,
when you're making the music, or is it just like, all right, we're gonna just record whatever we get and we'll figure it out later how it's
sometimes
going to.
For the album that we're planning, there are some things that we're not capable of doing live. We try to make an arrange for that, mainly on the keyboards or the synths, but we are trying to get, we understand that the recorded music has a possibility to go beyond what the live music experience can go, so kind of a separate both things, that the recorded music can, I don't know, take you completely to another dimension.
Yeah.
And on the live show, we focus mainly on the show, like,
yeah,
the lining, the sound, the energy, the costumes, the adrenaline of it.
All that still took me to another dimension last night.
Yeah, we are comfort of the result that it can translate really good.
Yeah.
But well, José Tomás is like I was saying, is he comes from a musical background, so he wants to, I don't know, he sometimes dreamed to have an orchestra.
Right.
Like playing with us, or maybe in the recorded music, we go with some strings or we go with some horns. But for the trio, for the drums, guitar, bass, and synths, we focus on the things that we can do. There are some other arrangements that I was saying, like the mostly like other orchestral music. That we're thinking about adding them or trying to get somewhere or somehow to sometime doing like an orchestral thing, maybe in a couple of years. I don't know.
Seems like there's a lot of possibilities for what you can do, especially being like an instrumental band. Mm. Is there a lot of instrumental like post-rock type music in Chile?
Nowadays there is a whole movement about it. We actually run a label in Chile that is called the Rock Psicofonique. That's like psychophonic rock, and it's mainly instrumental, post-rock, experimental, avant-garde, neoclassical. So we are really responsible about the creation of a scene.
That's amazing.
But there is some history of instrumental music, mostly in the recent years, mainly 2000s. There are some experience of in the 70s and obviously. But to name a few, La Ciencia Simple, Tortuga Anónima, Baikonur, Meridiano de Zurich.
When the band was first getting started, or even like with the music that you're making now, is a lot of the music that you guys are listening to coming mm-hmm. from other parts of the world, mm-hmm. like Europe mm-hmm. and the States, like that is like more geared towards like post-rock mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. progressive music?
Ah, yeah, we are totally influenced by Tortoise, Battles. Like I was saying, we all come from different backgrounds. I actually come from a very progressive rock, like historical progressive rock
like
background.
Yes.
Huh? Yes, and yes, Genesis, King Crimson, Caravan, Camel. But actually, I was really obsessive with Latin American progressive music. Invisible, La Máquina de Hacer Pájaros, Los Jaivas. And Javier comes with more of a post-rock background, and we kind of all started sharing our music catalogs or music libraries when we had iPods. And we kind of get to the point that there was this mixture of like electronic, classical influenced and progressive music. So like Tortoise, Battles, and there's a Norwegian band that we all really like, that's called Jaga Jazzist. They are totally amazing. And they are like nine guys, nine piece band. They do orchestral stuff, so they are totally an influential band. And the other are like neoclassical stuff, like Niels Fram in Germany or Hani Arani, mostly Gondwana Records artists and Erased Tapes label. But nowadays we actually don't think much of the artists that we're listening to make the music.
Right.
We kind of like have an idea and go for it.
Yeah. That may be like creates something a little more original, do you think, when you're not just...
I don't know, because we are always listening to music. Music is an everyday stuff. So sometime I listen to something and it kind of holds up in my brain, and then I did something similar in the rehearsal room. And that shit happens. I mean, everything's a remix, right?
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah. There's a whole documentary about it.
I like your remix of it. I like your band's remix of it. The Systemus and Stabilis is a good remix.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
For you personally, that you have more emotional attachment to the newer music because you've been a part of actually like creating it versus like the first record that you didn't actually play on? Or do you feel like it's kind of the same because you were around it from the beginning either way, even if you weren't actually playing in the band?
I kind of feel they are different stuff because the first record, like to listening to it and to play it, it's kind of more fun because it has like more like more parts and more challenges. But for the new music, we kind of thought in a, and went in a different way. It's not about the juggling of playing. It's not like an exercise music. It's mostly an emotional music. So it's more aggressive. It has more conceptual meaning. It has more like a whole conceptual design about it. So maybe it's not so virtuoso.
Yeah.
But that's the main point, like to go in a kind of a minimalistic way, deep into the emotions that we're trying to express and that we figure it out, that were things that we were feeling about when we were making the music, and all that came after the pandemic and after what was happening in Chile over those days, and in the whole South America and actually in the whole planet. So there's in the first EP, because the album we are dividing it in three EPs, like three chapters, and the first EP is about the cities. So it's pretty aggressive, pretty anger, pretty critic.
Yeah.
Like we have to do something about it, and it has like this destroying sound about it. So all the distortions go up. Everything is played like 120%, and today we're going to play, in the podcast, there's no date, but today at the Trifford Music Hall, we're going to play one song of the second EP.
Oh, nice.
And you're going to listen that it's completely another scheme.
I like that. One of my favorite post-rock bands did something similar to that.
Which one is it?
Thrice?
I don't know it.
They're from like the Los Angeles area, and they did they did four EPs like that, and there's earth, air, water, and fire.
Oh, okay.
And
like the elements.
And especially with like the fire is like the one that's aggressive and heavy, and the water is a little more like ambient.
Yeah, you can deny that.
Yeah, and like I really appreciate like the thought that goes into that type of music, and especially when you're doing it instrumentally, like you guys are. Where you're not using words to express any of this. Do you feel like that's just like the easiest way for you guys to communicate your emotions is more through the music rather than with words?
I wouldn't say the easiest, because I think we are dealing with kind of like an uncultural moment in the world. Like everything, everyone is like going TikTok and easy shit.
Yeah.
And just to give someone like a more thoughtful content, it makes it harder for them to understand. That's my opinion. But we are totally against the dumb, like stupidization of this society. Did you understand that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we are really into making like albums, so many singles,
right?
Going conceptual. Giving the songs a lot of meaning, trying to get the budget to make like really impressive video clips, try to design the physical album to be a whole experience, so to engage in a more not overload the intellectual stuff of it, like not going contemporary art about it.
Yeah.
But if we could make a book and like write a piece of history in the music scene or in the human history, that's the objective of us, like to not to do just music and to kind of build something out of it.
Yeah. Do you feel like the long form songs give you more opportunity to build the concepts?
In my personal opinion, yes, I think so. Because it's like I was saying, it's like kind of like a book.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with short books or like a small piece of poetry. But when you have more time, and that in that sense, when you talk about patience, patience is gold nowadays. Everything is too fast. Everything is in the music industry. The singles are 3 minutes long. In Spotify, you get paid if they listen to the 30 seconds.
Right.
And sometimes our intros are like 2 minutes.
Right.
So it's completely against the industry in that matter. We don't care about it, but
good.
We take the time to build whatever we want to build, and most of the times, not overthinking about it, the songs end up being 8 minutes long, 10 minutes long, 7 minutes long. We don't decide to make long music,
right?
But that's the result of it.
It just happens. Seems to be what you guys create.
Yeah, because we enjoy the loops, we enjoy the sequences, and in the live show sometimes it can go farther than that because we have to kind of fix things on the way. So
sometimes something gets looped a little bit
longer. 7 minute long can go 12 minute long. Shit happens.
So you guys just play, you only have to play 4 songs for your whole set, right?
Yeah, we actually play like a 45 minute set is 3 songs. Yeah. Once happened that they gave us for a showcase,
yeah,
and they gave us like 15 minutes. We could play one song. One song. And then we were talking to the promoter that 15 minutes translated to one song. And he was like, that's not my problem. And we said, well, maybe it's our problem. We had to try to make some more short stuff, but never works out.
Well, even listening to one of your songs, like, because it is, feels like, they're each kind of their own long books. Mm-hmm. Like you get so much out of each song, like each one takes you on its own journey.
Yeah, it's like in the classical progressive music, like King Crimson, you look the booklets of the CDs and track one has an appendix A and appendix B and an appendix C. And there you have 3 songs in one song.
So right.
We could totally defend ourselves in that way. Like one song is actually 3 songs, but we don't do that.
So, like, one of the most mind-blowing things about the live set to me last night was during that last song when Javier starts deconstructing his drum set.
At the end.
That was, like, one of the coolest moments I've seen in, like, one of the most memorable, like, impactful endings to a set that I've seen, just because I've never seen anything like that happen. Like, when did Javier start, like, just taking apart his drums during the last song, but still, like, playing things? And you got Jay is, like, moving around, picking up cymbals and hitting things too. Like, all of that was just absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, it started, like, 2 years ago, actually. Javier started playing with this SPD, doing...
That's a good impression of the
we all muck it up. And to get, like, the space to do it, he started, like, moving the cymbals away, and then Jota started helping him, and then he push it out of the drums, so it kind of went natural that we all started like, and because it is an explosive end, like the first time that we played that song, it ended like bye, and it was like, no, there's something wrong about it. We're ending too cold, and the song is not cold at all. If we could have fire on that part of the show, we could do it. So I don't know. We decided that we were going to, like, dissemble everything. That's actually kind of the meaning of the song. Predatum means depredation. So it's like, in our imagination, the last part. Well, the first part is like, I don't know, like a city of, and you can see like a group of rebels escaping the police, blah, blah, blah. And then they hide in a volcano, and then the volcano starts exploding, and the lava comes to the city and messes all up. So it has sense to, like, disassemble everything and go noisy. The cymbals, the drums, yeah. The bass.
It was incredible, dude.
That's the last opportunity we have to express ourselves.
Yeah, no, I think it leaves you with, like, a lot to think about, and you don't even know if, like, the set is really over because all the noise is still happening. Yeah. And you guys have left the stage. Yeah. Javier has, like, put the floor tom over his head and started walking to the merch table, which I think is, like, a great way to lead people to the merch table. I don't know if that's always the plan for him to, like,
we kind of understood
that. Yeah. That's the move, dude. That's fucking awesome. Yeah. Like, yeah, it was yeah, I was just like, what is happening? This dude put the floor tom up on the snare. Like, it's just, yeah, it was nuts. It was
actually
great.
We had to tell Jen, our sound engineer, to leave the sound.
Yeah.
Because she was going like, I don't know if to mute everything. No, just leave it.
Yeah.
Leave it. And you can leave too. Leave that work to the sound engineer in charge. And
yeah.
And the job is done when the noise is... up there.
It just leaves you in complete chaos. Yeah. With the way that you guys left
and
it.
Trying to break that moment when the band ends and they put, like, I don't know, Sly and the Family Stone. Like, let's chill. No, stay in that moment. Stay in that mood. Stay unstable. Stay in shock. Please, like, feel something. Please.
I loved it, man. All of that happened for me, you know, just be like, because of that.
I'm really glad that you.
Yeah. So thank you for an incredible show.
Thank you for missing words about it.
Yeah. And thank you for taking the time to chat with me. It's great to
get
to learn more about the band, and I'm excited to hear what the new music that you guys are going to put
out.
We're
kind of late of new music, but it's coming out.
That's all right. I want to play the episode out with Modus.
That's completely fine.
That's
the one that we're going to play today, and that's the newest one.
Yeah, newest track and one of my favorites. So we'll play the episode out with that, and I'll put the links for the band in the episode notes so people can keep up with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for talking with me. We end every episode of the podcast with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is, it's a program.
It's a program?
Exactly. Yeah, it means absolutely nothing. It's just like the way that my grandfather says the news program. He says it with a U. It's like some weird, I don't know, so American, it's like an older generation of people that sometimes say program instead of program.
Well, so in Chile, they instead of going September, septiembre, they go September, septiembre. It has no sense, but...
Yeah, like I said, it means nothing. It's just a goofy way.
It's a program.
You're doing it. That's Santa.
So I'm an old guy.
We're all old guys.
We all have old guys inside.
That's Santiago from Systemis and Estabilis.
Unstable systems.
Unstable systems. If you're American boy like me, and we're gonna play it out with Modus, and that's the Jelly Jams, and we will catch you on the flip side, Treefort, Chile, Portland, wherever you are listening from.
Thank you.
Cool, man. Thank you. Shout out to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast and for their longtime support of this thing. Don't forget to find that discount link in the episode notes or in my Instagram bio. 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, helping you get your music in all the places it needs to be. And big thanks to Drops.
for making some of my favorite edibles in the game, keeping me fine-tuned with their gummies, whether THC heavy or CBD heavy. Great for stress and solid sleep. Find them at your favorite local dispensary. Appreciate the support. More info on drops in the episode notes as well. Stay up, stay tuned.